Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What?
I hate Orm, the Ocean Master.
Well, fortunately for you, Orm never becomes the Ocean Master.
Well, oh yeah, we watched Aquaman. Ocean Man. Wait, did he not become the... Oh, yeah, I guess
he was. His whole quest was to become the Ocean Master. And
I thought when Dolph Lundgren, like, hung out with him... Oh, no, I guess he had to fight the crab people.
They were fighting the Brine King.
Yeah. This movie was, like, as the Australians would say, heaps stupid.
It was so close to being an awesome dumb guy movie.
Yep.
In the vein of, like, Tango and Cash.
It was so close.
And I was so excited. It's a certain kind of movie that when a character is wondering whether or not to stick his head in a toilet, I am very excited for them to make the choice to stick their head in the toilet. Mm-hmm. I was 100% on board, but it's just much like I'm tired of saying on this podcast, too long, way too long. You could have cut down a bunch of stuff, made it a nice, tighter movie, and it would have been a lot more fun. But it's as far as DC comic book movies go, it's probably one of the better ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's not saying much, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think the length was the problem for me. It's that I think if they cut it down and trimmed a lot of it, I think they would still trim the wrong stuff because I think they got the tone slightly wrong. I liked pretty much all the stuff when it had the 80s synth soundtrack. When they started doing like that sort of music where it's like, oh shit, everything's like disco lights and underwater and strange and like the really kind of awkward shit I liked.
The stuff that felt like the prequels? Because a lot of that stuff to me felt very prequel-y.
It felt like Thor Ragnarok to me is what I thought they were trying to grab from.
Yeah.
But it felt lively at least.
Yeah.
But the stuff with, and this is weird because I usually find him charming. Most of the Jason Momoa stuff is charmless.
Well, here's the thing. And I like him all right. Again, as a big dumb guy. Particularly like his bit at the end when he's like, what's going on? Like, you're going to be king. He's not like all of a sudden noble. He's like, oh boy, this is going to be fun because he's a big dumb idiot.
Yeah.
But what is this character? He's a big dumb guy that quotes Jules Verne.
Yeah.
You know, like he
mispronounces the name of ancient kings, which bothered the hell out of me, or ancient philosophers.
As a big dumb guy, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Well, you're not that big.
What did he say? Kierkegaard or something?
See what I did there?
No, I got it. Yeah.
I didn't correct the dumb part.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting you to.
But I did say you're not that big.
That's true.
As someone with weight issues, I feel like that's a high compliment.
Hey, let's underline this more.
Yeah, you should feel better, Dubby.
Yeah.
Hey, Dubby, I was making you feel.
But
good.
Like, he's just kind
Are
of this.
Have sex yet?
He's not that. He's not that exciting as like a as
no
the, as a
no,
character. So
no
I feel
character.
Like, yeah. Which is fine. I don't think he has to be. He's a big galoot. He's an oaf, but. I think he was charming enough. He won me over. I just don't like that they decide. Not that I like care anything about Aquaman, but they kind of wanted to turn him into the sweaty guy from Walking Dead. The guy that looks like he sweats Mountain Dew. Daryl. There's like, you know, shit kicking. You know, I don't know what how you describe the guy that listens to Kid Rock, I guess.
I see,
but give him a humanity that those people don't have.
Yeah, I thought they were just trying to make him New Zealand, like he was trying to do like haka dances, like which I think that's what his background is. But like you know the haka
the
thing people know.
I don't know if people know.
No,
but
you're
I know,
people.
But I know.
Like, yeah, okay, fine. But you're an example of the people.
Sure.
It's one of those deals where it's like I'll say something out loud. Oh boy, I have no idea if I just said the most obscure thing ever. Everybody's aware of this.
Well, you might tell the listeners.
It's like a dance that like people from New Zealand do as like a warrior thing, like the New Zealand All Blacks, their rugby squad.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay, so John didn't know what that was, and that's why he made me say it right now. But like they do this kind of, and it's this badass like warrior dance where they're just like screaming and their tongues flying out. It's kind of awesome. But it doesn't work in this movie because like that's what I think a lot of the ooh and holding up some kind of pointy object.
Yeah.
It doesn't work when you're also trying to be like quoting Jules Verne and knowing who Cicero was or like, oh, Marcus Aurelius or whatever that horrible thing. And we'll get to how dumb that was because probably the worst scene in any movie. But it doesn't work with those two trying to, because it's not like warrior philosopher. It's dumb guy that memorized some shit his dad told him because there's no sign that he cares or gives. Fuck this character. It's so stupid.
Here's a question I have.
Please.
And it's very nitpicky, but it wouldn't be the show if we didn't do this.
Oh, I have so many nitpicky things for this movie.
How does he have tattoos? They make it a point to show that blades do not penetrate his skin. How does he have tattoos? Because he doesn't go to Atlantis.
Well, here's... Okay, well, on that note, one of my nitpicky things. Black Manta, at some point in the film, stabs him with his grandfather's knife.
Does he?
Yeah.
I thought he stabbed him with the blade that was like...
No, he shows his grandfather's knife, and he stabs him in the shoulder.
Oh, I thought he stabbed him with the...
It started that way, with the Atlantean steel.
Yeah, I don't know. So I was confused by that. That answers my question, is that he can get... his skin can be penetrated sometimes.
Well, I actually think I have an answer, and it's going to make sense.
All right.
I believe that original tattoos were done with whale bone and charred ink on the end that you tap into someone's skin. That's where the term tattoo comes from, like the tat-tat of it.
Right.
In that Atlantean steel can pierce his skin, I posit, because a whale bone is from the sea.
So it's got to be sea stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I have no idea. It's a really good question.
That's for comic book logic, I'm on board.
That's what I'm going with is underwater stuff can make it, or maybe it's like Superman, where like he can like let people touch him. Because, I mean, he kisses Lois a lot.
Okay. But I did kind of like the introduction to him. Well, so you get this whole backstory because he starts with like with this voiceover of him trying to sound smart and quote Jules Verne. And his dad, who is a lighthouse keeper, played by, I forget the actor's name, but he was Django Fett.
Django Fett, yeah.
Yeah.
That's his name.
Finds a washed up Nicole Kidman washed up on his shores of the lighthouse and nurses her back to health. Because they're trying to make these people seem young, both of them are very eerily smooth and shiny. And I had a hard time getting over that. Because it was just they CG'd away the wrinkles and it was just very noticeable. A lot of CG in this movie, I don't like. All the underwater stuff is great, but all the like purple pink sky stuff they were doing when people were on boats, I never really enjoy that stuff.
That didn't work. The underwater stuff, I was talking to somebody about this, is that they got hair waving algorithm down fucking pat. Like,
yeah, sort of. But I also think that's why some of the people had dumb, like slick back hair. So like, I don't want to, we're out of budget.
Oh, fine. But still like, cause you play video games, you know how bad like animated hair can look. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, that seems like,
it was decent enough.
I mean, I had a problem with just seeing through dirty water all the time. Just the logic of how we can see the characters is kind of annoying.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Or like how the way their voices sound, or even though they're underwater.
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, it's something like, you just kind of go, okay.
But the looking at stuff, it's we're deep underwater. Great. They have eyes. They can see underwater. Fine. But there's a fight scene. There's shit falling all over the place. There should be sediment. We should see nothing. Mm. And it's clear as looking through, except every now and again, you'll see like a little white bit float through to remind you that it's like, oh, this is, I mean, I guess, what are you going to do? It's a fucking Aquaman movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, at some point, maybe don't make the Aquaman.
Now, if they were fighting in a lake, it'd be disgusting, but it's the ocean, which cleans itself, I've decided.
Yeah, fair enough. The ocean, the douche of the world.
Right.
So Nicole Kidman is Atlanta.
Atlanta. There's no T.
All right, so Nicole Kidman, she washes up and they basically fall in love. She eats his fish.
Mm-hmm. I did not see that. It sounds very graphic.
Oh.
They have they fall in love and they have a dang baby that's Aquaman.
And the baby, Arthur. Well, I have to wash, done, waving hands. Where the fuck are they?
Lighthouse.
Okay. So he looks like a New Zealander, Pacific Islander, Django Fett does.
Yeah.
They're in a lighthouse. The area around the lighthouse looks like the Pacific Northwest.
Sure.
And then Arthur is in the Boston Aquarium.
Yes. Yeah. So they're somewhere in New England.
But that's not what New England looks like.
I don't know. It works for me. I don't know what New England looks like.
Well, remember that one scene where he's driving his truck and it looks like it's in Oregon? Well, New England doesn't look like that.
All right. Well, there's an ocean. I know that's in New England too.
But okay, so I don't know where they are. That part bothered me because...
Well, essentially somewhere around Boston.
I mean, yeah, close enough to Boston. Guess.
Yeah,
but so Atlantis is supposed to be by Italy,
right? In the Atlantic Ocean, so they would be on the Atlantic Ocean side of America.
So she escaped from her captors and then washed up on the other side of the ocean.
Possibly.
That's just weird.
I didn't think about it. I don't think you're meant to.
I did. I thought about a lot of stuff. Because don't even get me started. When we get into the Atlantis lore that I have a problem with in this movie, and I'm not kidding. I'm not making this shit up.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yes. Anyway, so they go to the Boston Aquarium, and they have a scene directly from Harry Potter. Check mark for the people drinking every time I say it at home.
Uh-huh.
Where Harry Harry goes and, you know, where he goes to the zoo in the first one and he visits a python and the python listens to him and scares his bully brother or stepbrother and friend.
He can control fish, I guess.
Well, that's
the Harry Potter scene.
It's not the only reason I brought up the scene. Is this is the first instance of him doing the womp womp thing into the water, and the sharks come and bang on the glass.
They calm down when he does the womp womp thing, because one of the sharks is like, because they're banging him against the glass. The bullies are, and then the shark starts banging against the glass.
Oh, I thought the shark was banging against the glass to protect him.
Well, that's what it seemed like at first, because he was chatting with the fish. So he already has a rapport going on.
Yeah.
But then he's like, hey, wom wom, let's just bring it on down.
Okay. Yeah. Either way, he can communicate with fish, which is good and all.
But the Atlantis finds her somehow and send these guys in fancy pearl suits to go reclaim her. Bring her back to Atlantis because she was escaping an arranged marriage.
Oh, yeah. I actually do like those suits, though.
Those suits are cool. The fight scene was great.
Yeah.
And it made me think, because this is directed by James Wan, who did the Saw movies and The Conjuring, and it made me think about my complaint about The Conjuring, where I was frustrated that he wouldn't stop moving the camera. He is more suited to big, dumb guy movies. Because the camera in this first fight scene is so cool. How it, like, the camera just in a single continuous shot, you know, I'm sure CG assisted, is looping around the living room that they're fighting in and up and above. And it was really dynamic and the fight scene was very cool. And I think he's better at doing big dumb guy stuff than horror stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there's much argument that this movie looks nice. And for the most part, like there's some dumb, like I think constraints of trying to invent an underwater world that some stuff's just going to look awkward. And the sunset stuff like that. Right. The last shot of the movie is one of the ugliest shots I've seen in film.
Well, another thing that bothered me about the underwater stuff, and there's no real way around this, is that people look kind of silly when they're swimming. Like if someone's flying and kind of floats up, it seems like they have command over the space. But if someone's like waving their arms to like get somewhere, it seems a little goofier. So some of the noble movements that Orm was making just seemed very silly.
Well, we're at the first kind of villainous set piece where a group of pirates are taking over a submarine.
Yeah.
Finnish, it appears.
Russian.
Oh, is it Russian?
It looked Russian to me anyway. Russian, it sounded Russian.
Yeah, a Russian submarine led by the Manta. Mm-hmm. And, his dad, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I also just love, I mean, again, it's a comic book movie, but how all the pirates are in this like elite scuba gear versus thin Somalian guys in a t-shirt, which is, you know.
Well, I think these are more high-end mercenary pirates.
Right,
not none of your like Tom Hanks movie pirates.
Right, not real pirates. Yeah. But yeah, so they take over
the captain now.
This sub and kill a bunch of people, and then the dad takes a moment to tell his son, like, hey, I'm proud of you for murdering all these people and carrying on the line of us being pirates. Take your dad's knife or your this knife that your grandpa gave me. He was called the Manta. Now you're the Manta. You're the Manta now, dog. Then Aquaman shows up and beats them up and leaves them to die. The thing with Black Manta is as much as there were some very neat scenes with him, you could have lost him entirely in the movie. I know that like there's some specific plot things that happen to push the whole thing forward. But all of the stuff with him just felt so bloated. The whole thing is about him versus Atlantis. And I realized that Orm hires him to be like this sort of to cause problems. You know, he's his agent of chaos or whatever for Orm. But it's just they spent way too much time with him. Later, when you see there's a whole gearing up scene with him.
Yeah.
Why am I watching this at all? But I do like how Aquaman leaves them to die. Like he saves the Russian soldiers. Like beats these guys up. Dad, he's sinking the sub. Dad Manta is like trapped under a thing, and Aquaman's like, "Yeah, you guys are on your own," and leaves him to drown. Ask the sea for forgiveness. I think he says.
Yeah, he said, "Ask the sea for mercy."
And that's awesome. Like you are starting out with your hero doing this. I thought that was great. I was not expecting that.
I enjoyed that as well. Until I finished watching the movie and then I no longer enjoyed it. Because if that was a piece to give us that's what the character is, in one of two ways. One, he moves away from that to become a more benevolent character. Mm-hmm. Or two, he's just the type of guy that'll straight up murder people. Neither of those happened.
I disagree, because he totally lets Orm off the hook. He doesn't murder Orm at the end, even though he has every right to.
Yeah, but that's his brother.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's still like, he still caused all kinds of chaos. He's still like allowed his mom to, in theory, be dead. He's still like, even though that's been eventually proven to be false.
Yeah.
That's not a thing you just get over. I think, I mean, I can see your point, but I think it was, for as dumb as this movie is, I think it was enough character.
Yeah. You know, I guess. I felt like the rest of the movie didn't have him being that bloodthirsty.
Well, it's just because it's brought up when they're on the boat later, and like he brings it up that it's bothering him in that moment, even though he probably kills a bunch of other people up until that point.
Yeah.
But that was the harshest way he let anyone die, which that might give you pause. Like, normally I could just shoot a guy in the face. That's fine. But I suffocated this dude and I feel bad about it.
Also, you ever think he fucked a fish?
No, I don't.
Do you ever think about it though?
No, I'm not Troy McClure. Why would that be the case? Why would he all of a sudden?
You know, I'm just saying. Sometimes you're underwater and see like a sweet looking fish just throw your body.
I've never seen a sweet looking fish. Then after he does that, he goes home or visits his dad, who's at the lighthouse.
Let's circle back.
Yeah.
We skipped the introduction of Orm.
Right.
Orm is meeting with the other, because this
Patrick Wilson.
So this sets up the kind of the what's going on in Atlantis, how the political structure is.
Mm-hmm.
That Orm is meeting with the other Atlantean rulers, except for monster land underneath and the lost.
Yeah.
Blah, blah,
well,
blah.
Mainly just Dolph Lundgren is.
No, the first scene, there's like six guys and they all go like, hey, we should fight the surface dwellers, and they fuck off. There's like that like council meeting.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah. So that, and they're all like, we should fight the people that blah, blah, blah. Cause that's where the Russian sub shows up.
Right.
So, but this is where it starts to get, I mean, I know it's a comic book movie, but certain things need to make sense in the mm-hmm. comic book continuum. And I think we should talk about this here. When did Atlantis was so long ago, they had basically steampunk technology. And they sunk. So it must be in the timeline that we have. So in modern times, Plato, who is writing, you know, I don't know, 1000 BCE,
mm-hmm.
said that 10,000 years before that was when Atlantis fell.
Mm-hmm.
How are the statues still standing from the original Atlantis? How did the clues to where the dude's treasure come from a Roman senator holding a spyglass, which was 12,000 years later, was mm-hmm. when Rome fell. How is there seven different kingdoms underneath? When did guy that held the trident die?
Thousands and thousands of years ago.
So for thousands and thousands of years, he's been a skeleton sitting on that throne near the big octopus thing.
Apparently.
The big octopus thing said it's been an eon.
Yeah, you trust fish to tell time?
That's true. But I mean, there's a lot of weird time thing that it seems like it's simultaneously 1,000 years, 50 years ago, and 10,000 years ago. And none of it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like the Sahara being part of the Kingdom of Atlantis.
Uh-huh.
The Sahara hasn't been, like, that's 12,000 years ago.
Yeah, you know who the audience for this movie is? People that have read Plato. Like, no one cares.
Fair point.
None of this matters. I understand your point. I understand your concern.
It's more just that statue scene was so stupid.
What if there were two different Atlantises?
Atlanti.
But the point is, it's just a magical place.
Okay. All right. Beyond my being pedantic,
uh-huh.
what we're supposed to understand, without the time being stupid, mm-hmm. is that at some point between 100 years, 1,000 years, whatever, it sank. Because they used fancy technology that mutated them to be able to live underwater. And then so that's when King, whatever his name was, ruled. The guy with the original magic spear.
No, because he ruled above land. And then when he went underground, like when he went underwater, they still were able to breathe. But then he's like, you know what? I fucked this up. I'm going to go put myself in exile.
And that's when they broke up into like the seven nation states or whatever?
I mean, probably sometime after that. There was probably a little bit like, okay. There was a vacuum of power. So
that's
yeah.
the history. So what was happening? Who was Atlanta? Who was like, who was she married to?
Well, she was supposed to get married to.
Oh, sorry. Who's the generation before them is what I'm asking.
I have no idea. She's supposed to get married to Orm's dad.
So who was running the joint? So it's just, we've been watching like basically like the breakup of an empire.
Yeah, and it's like Game of Thrones.
Okay, so like we're only looking at Westeros and there used to be a giant, we're only looking at, you know, the North and it used to be one giant, you know.
Basically, yeah. And like that, everyone made their own kingdoms.
See, I was really fucked up by the whole it being Atlantis, but then there's like seven Atlantises that were like different kingdoms of Atlantis.
Well, Atlantis is...
Like Atlantis is the UK.
Right.
And then like the Sahara Kingdom would be like Wales.
Well, think of it as like New York and New York City. Because Atlantis, when you say New York, generally you're talking about New York City. That's the big city of Atlantis. But New York also encompasses the rest of the state. So you're not talking about Utica. If you can make it in Utica, you can make it anywhere. No one says that.
So the the really deep dwellers, the ones that look like kind of H.P. Lovecraft creatures, that's like Poughkeepsie.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crab people, that's like Syracuse.
Obviously.
Got it.
Yep.
I felt that was important. Actually, I was just really confused because I didn't understand what the stakes were in the film.
Yeah.
Of like, what are you taking over? What are you fighting for?
The ocean.
I guess. I mean, except for like they're right next to each other. So what about the other ocean? Is there what about the Pacific?
No, they're all connected.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we get introduced to Mira, who is, I don't think she's terrible, but I mean, I think the character's terrible.
Yeah. It's another one. That's part of it. Yeah.
It's just a case of what can you do with this?
Yeah.
You know, like her character is I'm hot and have water magic powers. Yeah. There's nothing there. So Orm has sent a tidal wave to wash out that bit of New England.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that was to kill Arthur? Or is that just happenstance?
I think it's damn. I don't know. I couldn't tell who did it at first. So
this movie made me feel stupid in that. I guess maybe I was just trying too hard to make it make sense.
Yeah.
In like an actual plot structure way.
That's what I'm saying. This was the way I should have watched. Probably should have watched Spider-Man Homecoming. Was how I watched this movie, because Spider-Man Homecoming like never got me. Never was dumb enough to make me just go like yay. Yeah. Where this was absolutely dumb enough that I was just like hooray. Yeah. For big guy punch.
Yeah, I really, boy, did I like Spider-Man Homecoming a lot more than this. And even after my kind of taking a few steps back from Spider-Man Homecoming during our discussion of it, man, that's a far more enjoyable movie. Yeah, but let's talk about that. At some point soon, the next note I have is him and Mira hang out underwater and he smells his pits.
Yes. Well, so.
John, he smells his pits underwater.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
It's because this is a great dumb guy movie. And it has the confidence to be like, yeah, this is stupid, but we're doing it. And there's not a smug wink, wink. Yeah, audience, we know this is dumb. No, they just go for it. But I don't think we mentioned that. Yeah, we kind of mentioned the opening. Orm's whole quest here is to unite the seven kingdoms of Atlantis so that he can become Ocean Master.
Yes, Ocean Master.
Ocean Master.
Master of the ocean.
Now, again, another movie might have tried to rework that. Not Aquaman. It just went... dumb guy straight through, just yes.
Let me pause it something.
Master of the oceans.
What if after he said that line, he goes, Oceanus Rex?
That would have
putting it like inside, you know, just the next step.
If they had said Oceanus Rex and then like dumbed it down to Ocean Master and then only referred to it as Ocean Master, perfect dumb guy.
Okay, good.
Thing. But yeah, I love that's the title, the all powerful thing that he's trying to get. Ocean Master.
Here's another weird thing about his kind of story arc. Is he's taking over the other seven kingdoms, and that's fine. I know I'm overthinking it. So he's taking over. He wants to be king of all the UK, underwater UK. Why does he not try to find the Spear of Destiny or whatever the fuck the trident's called?
Because it's, for a lot of people, it's just a myth. It's just a story you tell your kids. It's not a real thing.
See, it seems like if you're like of the higher ranked houses of Atlantis or you know, the Windsor Castle, you would know what's real and what's fake. And you would assume like, since that's his grandpa or whatever, since, I mean, this seems like this is a, you know,
right.
You know, a lineal kind of thing that, you know, the power stays in a family. That'd be like great grandpa's spear. And you could be like, oh, I should probably go get that thing that unites all the, or maybe they know about the giant eldritch creature from
quite
the deep.
Possibly, yeah. He maybe doesn't think he's worthy, but he also, you know, political machinations and all this stuff, he can make it happen.
Because I would not want to fuck with that giant thing.
After Mira and him meet, they go down to Atlantis. She starts saying that, yeah, Orm is trying to make these moves. And they meet in a shipwreck that has an air bubble in it. And it's a safe space because only the highborn can breathe both air and water. So just your average soldier can't just get in there. And they meet up with Willem Dafoe's character. What's his name? Like Barack or
Volko,
something.
I think.
Volko.
Yeah.
And this is one. I think one has.
Volko.
One has happened already, but it definitely happens here. And then it happens so many other times during the movie where a conversation is interrupted by an explosion. It happens so much.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's beautiful. Like, because the first couple times that happens, I'm like, we're doing that again. But then they just kept doing it. Yeah. That's good. That's the kind of confident, dumb guy shit that, like, Joss Whedon would never do because he'd have to be smug and point it out. No, this movie just went, we're dumb as hell. Fuck you. This is fun.
Yeah.
And I got to give it credit for that.
Yeah, so this is where they set up the Da Vinci Code style quest narrative.
Right.
Where they're meeting in the Sunken Galleon, also a coin from Harry Potter. And she gives him this information bottle. This ancient tube that's like a USB drive from the steampunk Atlantis high days. And you're like, hey, this is too old for us to read. Because that makes sense. Because, you can't just go get a gramophone somewhere. No,
beta tape.
Yeah. So it's like the only. Now, do they know they have to go to the sunken kingdom, right? Is there another clue on the way?
There's probably another clue on the way.
Yeah. So she said the only place that's around that we could find out where to read this is the lost kingdom. They probably still got some shit. You can read it.
Right.
But they get caught. We have. Oh, you know, we also. I don't know when it happens, but it's around here. The first flashbacks to Willem Dafoe being the mentor to Arthur.
Yes.
And teaching him how to swim and stuff.
Yeah.
And I just, one, fucking Dafoe's man bun is so great. Now, Dafoe's not the best looking guy in the world, but he's looking all right in this movie, which is weird.
Well, he's got, I think age has helped Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. He's got like a weird kind of, I think there's like a group of women that would find him sexy in this.
Oh, I think there absolutely are. But I think.
Podcasters.
I think this unique beauty as a younger man, like if you ever seen To Live and Die in L.A., he's a very, very interesting kind of thing.
When he's like 18, his like, headshots are kind
of, like it's sort of calcified into just this grizzled handsomeness. Like, he seems like he could fix my truck and then explain paintings to me.
That's a very good way of putting it. Yeah. And I'm not even saying that sarcastically. That actually is a good way of putting it. Finally, 50 something episodes in.
I made a point. They get captured by the soldiers and brought forth to Orm's.
Brought
forth unto Orm.
it's a perfectly valid, perfectly crabulent. It's just that made me laugh.
I'm being fancy. They were brought forth unto the bosom of Orm. Drives me crazy. This absolutely drives me crazy. He's explaining how awful the service world is. And they have technology, as we've seen before, because he's communicated with Black Manta. He had hired Black Manta to blow up the meeting.
These water
holograms things. And so all these holograms in the king's throne room are projecting like all the oil spills, whatever the humans have done. And they're glitching. Why are they glitching? This is supposed to be a technology that exists. It's in the king's fucking throne room. Why are they glitching? And why is that just, it's a visual touch that drives me crazy. Because it's just a way to be like, see, look, their video. And you dummies can't tell that. Plus, it's kind of cool. Everyone loves glitch stuff. I hate that shit. There's no reason they should be glitching.
But this is
have the cult shit. This is my shit.
Yeah.
Like this is, I drives me fucking crazy. And I don't know why. It's the same thing when there was in Batman versus Superman, or even in this where there's news stuff, and like the signal is glitchy, or the way the channels change seem. That's not how any of that looks. Yeah, it drives me crazy.
That would have annoyed me if I didn't pick it up. Though, weirdly enough, what you're talking about is my favorite part of this movie happens right here. So, based on video screens.
Yeah.
Orm is like, the surface world sucks, blah, blah, blah. Artifice, we have to fight now. And they're going to fight in the Ring of Fire. And he's all glib, is that the Ring of Fire? Is that it? It turns out this is giant stadium or whatever. Now, did you notice the Mortal Kombat this guy versus this guy signs in the background? What it said for Arthur?
What was it?
It said Orm versus Halfbreed, and underneath it said drunk, escaped Atlantis. Like it's just nice. Like a list, but it says Halfbreed, and then under his attributes, like Orm is like wonderful man with a beautiful smile. His is drunk.
Yeah.
It's that attention to detail that maybe like this movie could have been so great if it was. Yeah.
And there's a part that it took me a second. It's I would say this movie is art in that it challenged my core beliefs. If you tell me that there's a movie where there's an octopus playing drums, that shit should be joyful.
Yeah.
And it was not. This was an octopus playing war drums to people fighting to the death. And I was not prepared for that. I was expecting a happy octopus under the sea kind of stuff when I first heard about an octopus playing the drums in this movie.
See, I think the problem with that is, and this is where I think a lot of times we blame over length on the problem with the film. I think we needed a longer shot of that octopus. I think the problem, it went too by too quickly. You need to sit on that ship to really go like, that's a giant fucking octopus playing drums next to a ring of fire where two underwater sexy men are about to fight each other. Really let us sit there, but you don't get a chance to really like take it in. It's like, what the fuck? What just happened? Okay.
But again, this movie's got great dumb guy confidence where it's like, yeah, this is awesome, but you've seen it. We're fine. We're going to move on to the real important stuff. Two dudes clanging tridents.
Yeah.
Even though, is it technically a trident when it has 5 points?
No.
Because his has 5 points.
It's like a trident. Yeah, no, it's not.
It's a quindent.
No, that's what they use in the Avengers.
The Quindet.
Yeah.
All right.
So Orm beats the shit out of Arthur because Arthur kind of sucks at fighting underwater.
Yeah.
And fucking Mira comes in. It's like, fuck this. I'm saving this dude. And picks him up in her underwater mobile. I like the vehicle designs. Again, like there's a lot of the building of this I like.
Yeah.
So they run away.
I like is when they're escaping, she had mentioned previously that there are these fancy ass cannons lining the city to prevent anyone from entering in.
Yeah. Build that wall, John.
Those cannons turn and fire on them. They're just firing into the city.
Yeah.
Just right into the city. It's fine. Don't worry about it. They're just blowing away their own population.
Well, you know, that's the thing is one guy is getting away because he was bad. Like, I'm not even sure what he's charged with.
Yeah, being a half-breed.
Yeah.
And trying to treason against the throne of Orm.
Yeah, I guess.
You're not brought unto Orm without significant issues. Orm's got reasons.
Yeah, I mean, they say that about Orm.
They do. They escape and is this when they... Yeah, this is when they get into the whale's mouth, right?
Yeah, so they throw their ship in the lava. Orm thinks they're dead. They hide in the... He's like, hey, it worked for Jonah. Because this is a setup for... I mean, just a killer laugh later. Oh, boy.
Something like that. So they successfully escape after hiding in a whale.
It worked for Pinocchio. It wasn't Jonah.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. It worked for Pinocchio. And they escape. And she's like, well, we got to go to this ancient, to the Forgotten Kingdom. It's in the Sahara. And then you get this like
the
James Bond, Ursula Andress walking out of the waves onto the beach of Aquaman and Mira.
Yeah.
To some Pitbull song that's a remix of Toto's Africa.
Yes.
Can we be done with that? Can we be done with Africa now? Like with this, the song, with this and Weezer's cover and like all these online things of here's what Africa sounds like in an empty shopping mall. This is this generation's Don't Stop Believin'. But I feel like that the people of 10 years ago were like, Don't Stop Believin' is a great song. Let's overplay it a whole bunch and appreciate the song, where everyone now is like, no, let's turn it into something else.
Yeah.
Just leave it alone.
The Africa cover happens.
Yeah.
And they go to the sunken, hidden city of other Atlantis.
Well, they hire some Australian New Zealand guy fly a plane. And right when they're over where they need to be, she's like, this is it. Then she knows for some reason and just tears the window.
But she's got a tracker thingy, doesn't she?
Yeah, because she doesn't understand how life on the upper world works. And so she just rips off the door to the plane and jumps out. And the guy's like, golly, she don't have no parachute. That was my Australian accent.
That's very good.
And he goes, redheads, right? And jumps after her. And again, no, it's fine. There's not danger here, but there doesn't need to be. It doesn't feel like there is. It just feels like adventure.
Yeah.
And some of this movie is like this. Now we enter the real Indiana Jones shit, which I was very annoyed when it was starting to happen, but then I just kind of like let it happen. I still think there's too much of this. Like, I kind of wish all of this was just done underwater almost, although that would have been very expensive.
So they go into the desert, and here's a George Lucasian thing I love. The desert burps after it eats them.
Yes.
Because they fall down this hole and it burps because it's funny. It's like when that lizard eats the other lizard in the Star Wars, the special editions, and the lizard burps. And they go and they find this like ancient device where they can plug in their ancient USB soda can.
Mm-hmm.
And they drop it in and it doesn't work. They're like, oh, well, this used to be water. It needs to have water for power. And so she sucks the water out of his head using her magical water power.
Yeah.
And puts it on there. He's like, you could have just peed on it.
Yes. Hell yes. Dumb guy stuff.
Fine. However, she's supposed to be smart.
Mm-hmm.
Spit exists and you don't need magical powers.
But here's questions I have, though, because she makes some reference earlier to like crying, like her tears underwater. They just wash away. How do you know what you're even doing underwater? Have you peed underwater? Because it's not like you see a stream coming out.
Well, I mean, you can feel pee coming
out. Right. But I'm just saying, like, would you know that, like, liquid is happening? Or is it something like, my body has this feeling? And do Atlanteans even pee?
I'm going to say they have to pee only for this. Because they used to be proper above-ground humans. And mm-hmm. they can still mate.
But they can breathe underwater. What else has evolved? Do they have just a cloaca now?
No, but we could technically breathe underwater if the water is oxygenated enough.
Yeah, but that's not the case.
No, but what I'm saying is that's not so, like mechanically, it's not so different. Like, because if you have an oxygen-rich enough, they have an oxygen-rich slurry that you can actually breathe. Like, so, that's a thing that can happen.
Like in the abyss.
Yeah, that's like a real thing. I mean, it sucks and it's horrible and only rats can do it because, like, mentally you don't want to and it's awful. But
so essentially, so you're saying not an evolutionary change has happened, but not in a physical form in terms of like getting gills, but more just the way the body processes.
I mean, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that that's not, as far as like a mutation to happen, that doesn't seem like, that's not so giant of a step as to having your entire reproductive and excretory systems rerouted into one sucking cloaca. That's a lot more mutation than my lungs work slightly differently than they
used to. I disagree. I say you got that useless area. It just, those John, two things other slide together.
John, other people use that area.
Well, not mine. I don't rent mine out. I'm sorry. I'm just saying it's equally likely that they're just pooping out of one hole and peeing out of one hole.
All right, fair enough.
So, okay. But so also while this is happening, and I mentioned this earlier, there's this scene of Orm having previously approached Black Manta, I mean, like, here's all the gold for helping, you know, me do my nefarious things. And Black Manta's like, no, screw that. I want Aquaman. Give me Aquaman. And I was like, I'm not doing that. Here's your money. We're done here. And then after Aquaman has escaped, Orm reapproaches Black Manta. He's like, hey, guess what? I need you to kill Aquaman for me. Here's a bunch of Atlantean technology. Go fuck him up. And then we get this whole gearing up scene of Black Manta, like, reconfiguring stuff and putting the cool laser in his helmet.
You can't... I can't even begin to tell you how much this scene annoyed the fuck out of me.
I don't care. Not about your being annoyed. I don't care.
Don't care about that either,
but I don't. But like, no, I'm not looking at Black Manta going like, I wonder how he got his helmet.
Yeah.
Like, I understand fan service to a degree, and I don't know of any giant Aquaman fans out there, and I've seen Black Manta before in the comics.
I think Johnny Drama was pretty into it.
Oh, good. Yeah. But like, why am I watching any of this? All I need to do is show up and say something like, I've made some modifications and I'm good.
Yeah, you were right there. But it's every movie that does this. You have, what is a free ticket to billionairedom in your hand with this technology?
Yeah.
It is so advanced. You could go into any tech company and they would give you whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You could be a multi-billionaire in a minute.
Yeah.
So what you do is go into your shop. Which, by the way, you're a professional pirate. You're not a software engineer. You're not a mechanic. You're not like somebody that should know how to take apart the most advanced shit on the planet. And he goes, you know what I'm going to do? Take it apart. Oh, look, there's slime on my hands. You don't know what that slime does? That slime could be fucking Atlantis acid. That could be a million. You fucking, that annoys the shit out of me. It's like finding an MRI and going, you know what? I think you're going to find out how this works. It's just sledgehammering the side. Motherfucker, yeah. That's literally called the fucking miracle machine.
But I do think, I mean, again, like if you just shorthanded it, if you just went like, I made some modifications, fine. But the fact that you're showing me doing it, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Like,
if they said I made some modifications, I would be the only one annoyed.
Right.
I think you were justified to be annoyed and join me.
No, absolutely.
Join me in the pedantry.
I mean, yeah. No, I would, that stupid part of my brain would be like, well, technically. But at the same time, for complaining that this movie is too long, I think that's a scene you absolutely don't need in this at all. Because, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, I don't think you need him in this movie.
No,
I think
he's
you can have the whole thing be him versus Atlantis. Not because him overcoming his that I murdered this guy earlier doesn't really matter for the arc of the character. I mean, like that's an arc because he doesn't really grow at all during becoming king. But for this movie, I don't think he needs to. Did Indiana Jones grow that much in his movies? No. He just punched Nazis.
Well, I think he started to feel a little bit bad about banging a 13-year-old in Last Crusade.
But that was Last Crusade.
Okay, yeah. So fair enough. So he grew after that one.
Yeah.
They are in the lost city of Atlantis, and they see this message from old King Guy that used to have a trident. And they're like, he's like, here's a riddle. And Aquaman doesn't remember the riddle. And she's like, I memorized it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we have to figure out what the next step is. Fine adventure story. And I'm a sucker for these kind of stories.
Sure.
However, they've been walking for days, hours to get to that place, fell down into the subterranean cavern.
Mm-hmm.
How the fuck do they get out of there to go anywhere? He said, hey, mate, there's kilometers in any direction. There's nothing. These are people that, one, only lives underwater. Two, uh-huh, is, you would have to think physiologically, more used to water. They're in the middle of a fucking desert, have already walked forever. They don't have any water stores. How do they get out of that situation? You know how? Sidewipe.
Yeah.
And then they're in the next scene.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I have to think about these things.
No,
because my life is empty.
Yeah. And it's just like, no, we're done with that. They're moving on.
Oh, we're there now. So
you beat that level. And so now you're just here.
It's fine. I'm a sucker for these films. I just wish all the movie was like
right.
that. Don't give me the background story to Ocean Master. Just give me dumb say shit Ocean, in a row. Yeah,
well, that's like, again, like, you can be a short enough movie and just say dumb shit and it's fine.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you start trying to explain too much of it, you run into problems. But this is probably my least favorite sequence in the entire thing is, although it does lead into the rooftop chases. All right. So
yeah,
they go to Sicily, quote unquote Sicily, because it's just some external sweeping shots of Sicily and then a clearly CG set or a set against the CG background of some piazza or is that, I say that right? Or is it, or am I trying, or am I just saying pizza fancy? How do you say plaza?
Piazza, I think.
Okay. I was just worried I was saying pizza like a jerk.
I think that's it.
Anyway.
I mean, you know my feeling on the Italians.
It's true. But there's this. So they're, oh my God, she's having this manic pixie dream girl thing, much like the fucking elf in Bright of like,
fuck,
these people on land. Look at this dingle hopper. I shall comb my hair with it.
They go to a pizza. What'd you call it? Mike Piazza. And there's all these statues up there. It's like, that's Kaikoro. He was a good guy. That's Agrippe. And he just mispronounces all these old guys. And that's fine. And he's like, oh, no. And then he's like, Romulus, first ruler of Rome. He's the only real ruler here, which was the clue.
Mm-hmm.
They put the bottle that they found in the underground Sahara region, which, by the way, whatever.
Yep. Don't question it.
They look through it and they're like, oh, look, it's a map to the next location. That's how you get to world three. And then you go down the pipe and I know.
Was that supposed to be Mario music, by the way? Okay.
I talked about the timing already, but that makes no fucking sense that those statues on Sicily, they're like on a patio that somehow they were there when the Sahara was still wet. Doesn't make sense. We were coming out of Africa as a species, and not the delightful song that I love playing all kinds of songs. I mean, the continent.
Here's what happened. There's an easy explanation.
Bad script writing.
Nope. There's an easy explanation. So obviously if you're a king, you have, your court along with, Boko Haram or whatever, Willem Dafoe's name is.
Yeah. Volkun.
That person, the vizier. Your job is to keep the king's wishes like up to date. Mm-hmm. And so their technology is such that they can go back in and edit his will. And so before it was facing a different thing and they just re-edited it later and digitally added his lips going, it's in Sicily.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. And that's why those screens were glitching earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. Except now I have to resend my earlier things.
I am going to write Mr. James Wan an apology because I had no idea.
I need to rescind those death squads I said to his house.
So then Black Manta shows up as well as some goons from Atlantis.
Yes.
And they have a pretty fun fight scene slash parkour run.
At one point, the soundtrack, I wrote it down. It's an actual video game soundtrack. It's synthy in the background. It's going like, burr, 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 burr. Like it just sounds like a flipping video game. And this was the, this, I brought up this scene earlier. So all the Atlantean soldiers are wearing these suits of armor that are filled with water so they can survive in the upper world. And Mira, or is it Aquaman at one point, like takes the cap at the back of one of their helmets.
Mira, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And pulls it out. So it starts draining. And the guy in a moment of like panic jams his head in a toilet.
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean,
so good.
It's kind of awesome.
It's so good. Cause again, like it's this confident thing to just be like, just be that dumb.
Yeah.
And it's great.
And so they have
there's no second thought about it.
Big long chase sequence, everything exploding in slow motion. Aquaman beats Black Manta.
It's a long protracted scene, which is cool because at one point, one of the guys, like Mira, like hits one of the guys down into a living, you know, into someone's house apartment. And there's a guy in a white beater going, Mamma Mia, burn it to pasta, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Spicy meatball, et cetera.
He can like track her, whatever fancy technology he has. He can track her. So he's just like running through hallways and walls. And just the way that pays off, I thought was great. Like where she's leaping from one house to another and he just crashes through the wall to crash into another wall.
Yeah, no, the timing was
so fun. Yeah. It was very cool. But so at the end of all this, it culminates with Arthur having to fight with Black Manta and Black Manta's new powered giant helmet. And I thought it was just like a cool thing the way he ends up like pulling, I don't know, it's like from a statue or something like that. These two like steel balls with chains on them.
I think it was just balustrade kind of a thing, just marking off where the patio ended. Yeah.
But he just like takes it and like uses it as a bola, wraps around Black Manta's head. Advises he's shooting this laser, so it blows up his helmet. I just thought that was super cool.
Yeah.
And then Black Manta is like falls off this cliff. And there's a shot, it's very brief, but it seems like they mounted a camera on Black Manta's chest and you see like his face, like the helmet, as he's falling down the mountain. And I was super excited, I was not expecting that shot. That was pretty badass.
Yeah.
But I don't understand, with the exception, there are some exceptions, and I think Batman Returns is an exception, movies that are like, no, we need to have two supervillains. We need to have two. And again, I think I would also argue that Homecoming does this pretty well, with the Shocker, where it's like, no, he's a guy in the employ of him. We don't need to spend a whole lot of time with him.
Hmm.
But Black Manta should not be in this movie. For being the sort of major Aquaman guy he is,
yeah.
It doesn't add a whole lot here. This was a fun little action sequence, but in terms of everything else that's happening, it really just drags everything down. You could have just done it with all underground or underwater people.
No, I thought that was pretty awkward. I don't really need him. Or, I mean, frankly, if you're going to have Manta, and I'm fine. See, I kind of like him. That thing is fine. You just need to turn down some of the underwater stuff, which,
yeah.
You know, I'm
they turn
you,
him
like,
into an afterthought.
Yeah. Other than, like, there's very few examples of the two villain movie, other than maybe Milo and Otis,
yeah.
That are effective. And this was not one of them. And so
well, it's Ballistics, Milo v. Otis.
Oh yeah, I think that was a sequel though.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So they steal a boat.
Yeah, because she doesn't understand that all the boats in the marina are not just for public use, which is interesting. Like, so is Atlantis more of a socialist or not socialist communist society where just like there's no private ownership?
I didn't understand if that was her being funny because
no,
she doesn't
she
have
just,
a character, so I couldn't tell if that's her being like. Witty, or she actually didn't understand that they were.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
but
that's a bad character.
Yes, but this does lead to one of my more favorite moments when they get into the territory of the evil, the fish people that have devolved into the evil fish people.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the scene, and it makes me angry because I thought there were some great scary bits in here. But then I think about all the horror movies of James Wan that I've seen that are not very good. And I wonder where the disconnect happens because they're attacked there. And this scene, like, so there's a storm happening and she looks over, there's nothing there. Looks back again, lightning strike. There's this evil fish man there. That was pretty cool.
What were they called? The Deep?
I do not recall.
Let's just call it that. From
okay.
Now on. Okay.
So they're being set upon by these evil fish men and they escape by jumping off the boat and diving underwater. And that shot is so cool.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Where he's got this flare because the flare, they're scared by the flare because they used to the deep water. There is just a bajillion of these things like swarming in on them. And you see this very long shot. And it's held for a very long time of them swimming as all these things are kind of swarming around them, but staying away from the fire. And it was very creepy and effective. And James Wan's horror movies tend to suck.
Yeah.
And so I'm shocked. I will give him credit though. I don't know if he directed the saw, the 3D saw, but that movie featured a scene where someone throws a saw at the camera. And that is so perfect because it's called Saw 3D. That person is up there with Kubrick now for me, as far as the director goes.
Well, so that's the end of John and Tate stuff. I hope you enjoyed our show.
But I thought that scene was really cool. And yeah, so you get this little thing, they escape.
You know, that I think that's the best shot of the film, like looking where it's like, it's got a triangle from the, actually, weirdly enough, it is a Kubrick shot. Like it's got this triangle, like center shot, boat center. Like it's really framed. I mean, it's not framed at all.
It's all CG, hell yeah.
That looked really great. And they swim down to like the deepest, darkest parts of the ocean. They're running out of flares. And then they see underwater tornado black hole.
Yeah, this thing just happens. I have no idea because you're like, oh, it's like a typhoon or a whirlpool or something, and then no, it actually warps them. Like because it's pulling them apart. No, let's stay together. They try to grab hands. No, it pulls them apart, and then they warp. And like you see, like because she gets Mira gets flung. The next shot is Mira getting flung out of something, and then the pole closes.
Yeah.
Dumb doesn't matter. The movie's like, no, you don't. Also, it doesn't, yeah, shut up.
Talk about dumb, and I can't say how much I loved it. They just go to the journey of the center of the earth. They're in dinosaur land. Yeah. As they come into I've been watching this movie for what, 6 hours at this point?
Yeah.
I still managed to get excited because I went, really? You're doing fucking Journey to the Center of the Earth? There's pterodactyls flying over. Fuck yeah, James Wan.
Yeah, it was great. But yeah, so they get up to Dinosaur Island because she's rescued by some, you know, masked figure that in no way could possibly be Nicole Kidman. And then it turns out it's Nicole Kidman. She has not been sentenced to death as you previously thought.
Now, let me ask you, as a first-time watcher of this, did you know that was Nicole Kidman? Like, you were expecting that? Or was that, not that, like, oh my God, that's a surprise. Or was that telegraphed for you?
I assumed, as soon as the figure was on the beach and wearing white, I was like, that's Nicole Kidman.
Okay, because I watched this for the first time quite drunk in a theater. And I got kicked out by this point. I barely remember. Like, I was just needed something to do. So I don't really remember the reaction. So watching this time, remembering that that's her, obviously. Like, oh, I wonder if I was surprised by this the first time. And I don't mean, what? Yeah,
I was not surprised that she was going to show back up.
It is a superhero movie, so killing someone's mom is rather, you know,
a thing that happens.
That's normal. Yeah. So yeah,
but
wait, your fish is named Martha too.
So then Aquaman shows up because he managed to get flung there too, and he's like, "Oh, mom, you're alive! Hey, that's great!" And she's like, "Oh yeah, that whole Trident thing, that's real. That's here, but it's being guarded by this horrible monster."
Yeah,
and he's like, "I got this. Don't worry about it." And he goes off, and this, again, like, this is a thing that touched on some horror points in my brain, is that I don't like tentacles. And all you see of this monster at the beginning is just tentacles. Because he finally finds where the grave is.
John, I have like 30% of the Japanese internet that you do not want to watch.
No, I do not. And it's not only are the tentacles preventing him from getting there and beating him up, but they're also like saying mean things to him.
Yeah, I did like that the creature is so fucking huge that we're only dealing with the end of its tendrils, and that is beating the shit out of this fucking superhero.
Yeah,
man.
You don't need to see what it all is, and then it's just like, you smell bad.
And I did, I had to find this out later, but that's Julie Andrews.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's Julie Andrews doing the, Julie Andrews is Mary Poppins, right?
Yeah.
Yes. There's Mary Poppins that does the voice of the Eldritch Horror.
He eventually, like, because the thing tells him that he's not worthy, and he eventually's like, yeah, totally. I suck. I just need to do this because it's the right thing to do and a tasty way to do it. And the monster's like, oh, you get it. Yeah, you get what I'm all about. That's cool.
She also had the moment of, you can hear me.
Yeah.
It's been 1,000 years since someone could hear me. Which again, time, I'm not going to go. Well,
you,
time
she on, says, but, you can understand me.
Yeah, understand me. Yeah.
So I'm sure people are like, no, I'm worthy. She's like, no, you're not getting what I'm saying.
Yeah. And she's like, it's not since King, whatever the fuck his name, that anybody could understand me. No, but here's a question about that. So King, dead guy, the king under the mountain, is sitting there on his throne with his trident. Why is he there?
Because he put himself in exile. Because he's like, he's the one that sunk Atlantis and was like, nah, this, like, I know this is powerful, but I'm going to, if I screwed it up and I'm great, other people are going to do even worse with it. So I better steal myself up with this stuff. And
so he just swam to the depths.
Possibly. I mean,
and then just sat on a throne and waited to die. Like, I'm not, sorry, I don't mean to be accusatory towards you, but I believe you wrote this movie and therefore.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. I did. Thank you for noticing. Yeah, basically. I mean, he just set himself, he went into exile. He just went, I'm going to hang out down here and then may probably eventually die because I killed a bunch of people by sinking this great land.
Yeah, he sucks as a ruler.
And, yeah, I mean, he made some bad choices.
Yeah.
So Aquaman successfully robs a grave and everyone's very excited about that. Here's what I understand. So he gets the trident,
mm-hmm.
which comes with clothes because now he looks like Aquaman. He's got the orange shirt and whatever.
The dead king had those clothes on and I wonder...
Did he? I thought he was just wearing green and a cape.
Oh, I thought he had those clothes on. But my thought was that when you held the trident, that was part of the power. Like, I don't
know. Like, it reveals your true form, your true orange shirtness.
No, I was thinking like nanobots or something. You know, like sure, why not? I mean, not nano, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just part of Atlantean magic or whatever. Yeah, so he gets that. He guttural yells. And then I also realized that maybe that little kid from Six String Samurai was actually just Atlantean.
That could be it. Because
there's a lot of yelling in that. There's a fight between, while that's happening, Orm, Dolph Lundgren is fighting the crab people.
Mm-hmm.
Would you remember, what'd you call them?
Well, the leader of the crab people is named the Brine King.
Yes, the Brine King. Yes, movie.
Yeah.
So that's happening. And then, so during that fight, all of a sudden, the ground starts shaking and the tentacles start coming up from this giant thing. And Arthur comes riding that. This is, I think, the third time it's happened where he looks through the spokes of his underwater fork.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, they think that looks cool.
Right.
And I disagree on a fundamental level.
This other twist, and I missed this, but this battle scene, right before this battle scene, when he's talking to the Leviathan, he also does the wom-wom thing to them, the talk to fish thing.
Yes.
And they cut back to him being a kid and doing it. And I thought of Order of the Black Eagle. Or it's like, you've shown me this already. I'm not that
stupid. Oh, yeah, like, totally.
I know that he can do this.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Established. Like, but, well fucking established.
So Orm is, it's already been sort of established that Dolph Lundgren, being Mira's dad, knows what Orm's doing. It's not really right, but he's also like, yeah, we, you know, what are you going to do? This guy's going to kill me or I'm going to team up with him. They know that Volcom or whatever Willem Dafoe's character's name is, has been betraying them. And they're going to go ahead and fight this Brine King. Because there's been several scenes throughout of Orm taking over different factions.
Yeah, he's well on his way.
Yeah.
He's got six of the Seven of the Kingdoms.
Yeah, so he's going to get the Brine King. Yeah. And so this huge battle's happening. And before Aquaman shows up, this giant battle is happening. And it's quiet. And this actually, some of this happens when Aquaman is fighting. There's not like big rousing symphony music happening. It's just the sounds of battle. And I thought that was an interesting choice and kind of cool. Although admittedly at the beginning, I'm like, why am I watching all this? But then when Aquaman finally shows up, it's like, oh, okay, now here we go. And then I hated this. For as much as I love the dumb guy confidence of this movie, I hated the scene where the battle's, you know, the tide's starting to turn in battle and Mira and Aquaman in the middle of the fight, lasers are shooting all around their heads. He's like, well, what do I do now? And she's like, well, you gotta go find Orm. And then they kiss. And it's a neat looking shot.
Yeah.
But like, there's lasers happening.
Yeah.
Like
great hair CGI.
Yeah. Let's get on with it.
I just would like to back up for 1 second. I know that they're called tines. I said spoke, I think. And
did say spokes.
Yeah. And that's embarrassing. And I'm sorry.
This part will never make it in. Well, and then, so here's a thing about Aquaman, with his newfangled ocean master power. He is
Ocean Master.
So he basically gained the power of slavery because he just turns all these fish at his will, not theirs, at his, to fight his battle for him. And because they're just fish, they're just doing whatever fish do. But now they have to die to serve Aquaman's cause. So he just gained the power of slavery.
I mean, I don't know. I think slavery is a strong term.
What do you want to call
fish.
It? Yeah. He enslaved fish.
But they're fish.
Yeah.
So you're saying do you enslave a horse you own?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, all right. Fair enough.
The horses I own. Yes. Yeah.
Also, here's a really important point that I can't skip over. The giant Leviathan monster looks like Pilot from Farscape.
Yeah.
There's like one person to the audience is like, yeah, Alex, that's a real good point. I know what you're talking about.
Is it you listening to this later?
There's like, a lot wrong with
go
that
Go off,
statement.
King.
Yes. Yeah, I want to, one, agree with myself, and two, listen to this. Look, I talk it through. It's all that's happening. All right, so he looks through the trident a few more times. It looks great. Oh, yeah, so he's like, hey, I'm calling you out, brother. We warm. Have to fight. Ooh, yeah.
I'm coming unto
yeah.
warm.
Yeah. Let's go up on top. We'll fight this out. And she's and Mira's like, you have to fight him. Last time you fought him in his element, this time you fight him in yours.
Yeah.
Which is a bullshit ending of this movie. Because he just got the power of being an ocean master.
Right.
So his first fight, they're going to fight in the air.
Well, on land. But, I mean, I
well,
guess.
Well, no, on a sub.
Right. In oxygen.
Yeah.
But that fight scene was pretty cool. Like, it out Zack Snyder, Zack Snyder. That had a very Zack Snyder feel to it.
It was fine, except for, and you referenced it as well, so it's not just me. That this reminds you of the prequels, right?
Earlier, yeah.
And that John, what was the move he did that was a pretty good trick to finish this? That's right. Spinning. That's a pretty good trick.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You see Willem Dafoe do it earlier. And,
yeah,
and
I know. But John.
No, that part is stupid. But the bit where he's like, some of the slow-mo stuff is out Zack Snyder, where like he's got Orm's head like almost against the propeller and just the propeller's kind of skidding off of his helmet. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I like the way they slid. It is a nicely, it's a nice sequence shot, except ruined by the fact
that like
spinning,
you had to call back like that. That was just a stupid move. But yeah, so we answered.
But also, you're just spinning the thing. It's mind-bogglingly stupid.
Well, I don't know if I do this cool yo-yo trick that is unstoppable.
Or just beat him with the magical, because in the end, he does a flipper over him and chops Orm's trident in half.
Yeah.
Or
he wouldn't have been able to do that unless five he spun. Dead. No, they had, at this point, all the dents were tried.
But the point of this is...
3 points.
You have the magic... The 3 points of this is you have the magical King Arthur's sword in trident form.
But you know what also he had? An acceptance of his past.
But why would you just hit the other one with the better thing and it breaks? The whole
but
spinning
he needed to
is,
accept his past first, and he did that through spinning the thing.
But he it's not like
this
he
is and, simple Jungian.
It's not like him and Voltron were in a fight. Like he accepted Voltron's or Voltron,
no, but
whatever.
But he accepted his own past through spinning. That gave him the power to break.
You know, I think the philosopher Jake Lloyd did say spinning. That's a good trick.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. Yeah. My mistake. So, yeah, they fight on the sub. And then he quotes Scipio or some other dead idiot. Because, again, they're trying to make him like somebody. Yeah.
Nicole Kidman shows up. It's like, hey, I'm your mom too, Orm, remember? And it's fine. And but rather than kill him, Aquaman sends him away, puts him under arrest. So he's like, hey, just in case the sequel happens, I'll be back.
You know, he says, you know, when you're ready. Let's talk.
Let's be
but also,
bros.
It's a weird turn of phrase. Sorry to be. This is probably the most pedantic I've been in this entire show. This
oh,
episode.
Man. Here we
no,
go.
No, no, no. Not this point. I just mean this whole episode. I feel like every point I've made is just pedantry. But him saying, when you're ready, let's talk. That's very like. That's something your therapist would say, not the beer drinking, haka dancing, badass ocean master. Yeah. Just, oh, when you're ready. You know. How does it make you feel? Like it character wise, it didn't build to that. It was just what's happened? Why did that's a weird line?
You know, maybe you spent so much time swimming in this ocean. You need to take some time swimming in Lake U. So that happens. Someone starts saying something about him being the ocean master or something. And he leans over to Mira and goes like, "What the hell is this about?" And she says, "That means you're their king." And he's like, "Oh boy, it's gonna be sweet."
Yeah.
And I'm hell yeah. He's gained no nobility. He's still an idiot. And then like, oh, it seems like this movie's gonna end, but because it's a superhero movie, it can't possibly end. So then you get the scene at the lighthouse, and his dad looking out at the light, standing at the end of the dock, hoping his long lost love will come back to him, and she does. And they hug, and I don't care.
Well, here's the thing that bothered me, not about this scene, but bothered me about the CGI earlier, is that the digital de-aging of her, like, it didn't do enough.
Yeah.
Because she looks great now.
Mm-hmm.
So when she's just her regular, in quotes, old self, and then it's actual age Jango Fett, it's like, it just puts an extra fine point on how de-aged he was, because, like, she... looks about the same as her DH self because she's got flawless, almost wrinkle-free skin.
Botulism, yeah. We'll do that. Botox, whatever.
Yeah, Botox is made of botulism. Yeah, it's fine. Thing. Yeah, everything works.
Also, hanging out with dinosaurs is good for your skin. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah. But I mean, either way, it was just one of those, maybe don't de-age her. I mean, she is like a magical being from out of the ocean. Just, yeah. You know, just have her be
it's fine. That.
It was just an awkward thing. But so then this is the ugliest scene in the film. Aquaman swims really fast up to the surface, jumps up, and in the fakest ass, like, it looks like the poster from 1987's Tequila Sunrise, he poses.
Hell yeah.
And Aquaman.
Yeah, well, because he gives a whole speech about how, like, I am Aquaman, and I'm really bold. Blah, yeah, blah. Yeah, thank you. I've seen the movie. I got it. Yeah. But again, just dumb guy shit, and it's great.
Now, John, let me ask you a question. Did you stay for the after credits sequence?
I wondered if there was, but I did not care.
There was one. Do you want to know what it is?
I would love to.
So the after credit sequence is Manta is lying on a bed and he just woke up and he's all fucked up and someone's at a counter fixing the Black Manta helmet.
Uh-huh.
This is Atlantean, isn't it? And he goes, well, what do you know about that? It's an awkward thing. He just, you would better not touch that. And he touches it and then it shoots a laser out of the Black Manta helmet because it still works.
Yes.
And that's the after credit sequence. Now, I just really need to point this out. Black Manta got the living shit kicked out of him with zero hope of winning that fight at any given point. Why is this his helmet that he never used in a fight that he got the living shit kicked out of him. Round two's coming up now that Arthur has the world's most deadly fucking sport.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really dumb.
Don't care. I will say this for this movie, because this movie did well enough. DC went, okay, we're done doing the whole shared universe thing.
Yeah.
We're done with this. We're going to start doing, directors can do their whatever they want now in terms of having these characters have their own story. We don't need to make everything look like Zack Snyder's bullshit. And that is, as much as I'm tired of superhero movies, that's the best thing that can happen. Because one of my complaints with Marvel stuff is that they're all the fucking same.
Yeah.
And so if DC's just going to be like, no, whatever, this the Flash movie's going to look totally different than this, it's going to look totally different than this, great, do that. That sounds so much better than just Iron Man 2.0.
Yeah. Well, I'm down because, I mean, they sucked at making shared universe movies. So,
and this is not a good movie. It's too long, but like it was dumb fun enough. It had the chance to be like super dumb fun, but it was dumb fun enough.
I think that's the thing that annoys me the most about this film is that the potentiality of how much fun I could have had. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of just, this is so stupid. I should be excited. There was a couple scenes that it was, but it's kind of. It sat there. And I regret on last episode, I don't know if you caught the line, but I recommended the audience watch this. And I'm like, oh no, there's only like three scenes that I actually was really excited about.
It's dumb. If you're going to like just looking for something dumb to do. Yeah, you could do worse.
Yeah. Hey, John.
Hey.
Did I ever tell you how I got these scars?
No, how?
Oh, I didn't expect a follow-up question.
Oh.
I'm kind of panicking now. Maybe we should talk about what we're doing on the next episode.
Oh, sure. We're going to, being that it's episode 50, we're going to go back to our roots of episode 1 and revisit the Nolan Batman trilogy and do The Dark Knight.
Yes. That is the one with the guy from 10 Things to Hate About You.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Is that it?
No, I'm just saying. Oh. There's 10 Things I Hate About You.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I got the list down. You should be happy.
Jeez. I can't think of like more than two with you.
Yeah, that's because I'm flawless, except for those two things.
Yeah, those two are.
Woo! My racism. No, I'm curious. I have not watched this movie since I have changed my opinion on Chris Nolan, largely after Interstellar. So I'm curious how that holds up.
I am curious to revisit the conversation about movies with two villains, because this was, I didn't like most of this movie. Because of the second villain. And I'm curious to see, because I haven't seen it in a while.
Who? Wait, the Joker?
No, Two-Face.
Oh, yes. Okay.
I remember that being terrible to the point of, like, I don't like the movie. But I'm not holding against the movie. I saw this a while ago. Like, I'm watching it with fresh eyes. I barely remember it. But I remember the Joker stuff being fun. So I'm kind of curious to actually sit down and force myself to pay attention to the scenes that don't have Heath Ledger.
My guess is, I want to make a guess for myself here, that I feel like, because if I'm remembering my opinion about this movie when I first saw it correctly, is that I feel like Two-Face worked thematically more than narratively. And I sort of let that happen. And so I'm curious if I'm going to have the same opinion this time around.
Yeah, we'll find out. You can find us on Facebook, hit a like on there. We're on all the podcasters. So if you can subscribe and review and do all the good stuff. And there is an episode on Patreon. That's just John and I talking about Six Ring Samurai. So it's patreon.com/AlexBolen, Alex with two X's, B-O-L-L-E-N. I'll leave a note in the show notes for a link. There's other things with me and John on there and stuff with me because it's technically my Patreon. But, yep. I mean, since no one signed up, I don't have to share it with John yet.
That's true.
It works out well. So, yep. See you next time.
Bye.